In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Welcome to the iSpy Radio Show. I'm very glad you're joining us today. On today's show, we are taking a break from keeping an eye on big government because it is our annual 4th of July show. No politics today. Instead, it's all about celebrating our freedoms. Now, if you've never heard our annual 4th of July show before, these are a lot of fun. We take a look back at how the 4th came to be such a big part of America's annual celebrations, and we take a historical look at how the 4th was celebrated in years past. On today's show, we'll take our usual look at early colonial celebrations and how it all got started, but today we're especially focusing on the 4th as it was celebrated during westward expansion and on the Oregon Trail. I'd like to welcome Greg Leo, who is practically iSpy Radio's in-house historian and our regular guest for our 4th of July shows. Greg is a political and business consultant in his day job, but one of his real passions is history. And there are a few people I know who love the 4th of July like Greg Leo. Greg, welcome to the show, and let me be the first to wish it Happy 4th of July.
Mark, thank you so much, and it's always great to celebrate our freedom and our nation's birthday of independence, so this is going to be a great show.
It sure is, and it's always fun because, you know, it really is a day to put politics aside and really focus on the things that unite us. And as a country, we really do have more that unites us than divides us. And so I think it's important to focus on those things. And I know you and I have talked in the past. I just love looking back at some of my own 4th of July celebrations. It brings back a lot of fond memories of picnics and going to fireworks and just being around so many family and friends. It's a great time of year.
Well, it's a great way to connect not only families and communities, but people with the history of the American story. Of course, the signing of the Declaration of Independence was the great break with Great Britain and, really started us on the road to the nation that we have today. And it was a difficult road. It's a road that it's important to remember.
It is. And in our past shows with you, we've talked about how this has been celebrated really from the earliest days of the U.S. And I know that there were some celebrations of the 4th of July that were happening actually prior to the actual winning of the war. But were those celebrations that were happening before the Revolution was won, were those widespread or were they just sort of in isolated areas?
I think they pretty much were widespread. Remember that, during the Revolutionary War, about a third of the people still supported the crown. So there were Tories, and of course, in the Tory-controlled areas, they probably did not celebrate the 4th of July the way we think of it. But what they did was they read the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. And so as the word kind of emanated out of, Philadelphia to all of the town squares and, parks across America, across colonial America, they would have a printed copy of the Declaration, and they would read it out loud so that everybody could understand why this Revolutionary War was necessary, and what the 27 indictments were against the king.
Yeah, and that certainly became a long-standing tradition for many 4th of July celebrations down through the years, and we'll come back to that. It is interesting, in some of the research that we did for this year's show, it turns out that in the pre-revolutionary years, they had a lot of celebrations of the king's birthday, but then once they declared independence, the celebrations shifted a little bit. In fact, it was kind of interesting. During the summer of 1776, some colonists celebrated the birth of independence by holding mock funerals for King George III as a way of symbolizing the end of the monarchy's hold on America. I noticed that didn't seem to stick as one of the traditions.
Well, breaking with the mother country was difficult, and the country was divided. There were Tories, there were patriots, and then there is probably half the people who really were not thinking about politics. And that sounds similar to today, but the actual declaration, in a way, is an indictment of, the charges against the king, but it also set a higher tone about the aspirations of personal freedom, holding the truth self-evident that, we do believe in our rights, our basic human rights, and also in the equality of rights amongst people in our form of government. So it really laid the framework for what we would become as the American people.
It did, and like you say, it really gives not just the intellectual foundation for why we broke, but there really is a lot of emotion. When you read the Declaration of Independence, and I know that you guys do that there at the Newell House, and that I think is, it's really a very emotional time when you read through those words that are so deeply ingrained in the American psyche.
Well, there were horrible things that happened, and it was tyranny. There were people, you know, people had troops quartered in their homes. They lost their basic freedoms of speech and assembly. Those that were captured were put on prison ships and tortured. In fact, I think this is a great time to talk about the 56 signers of the Constitution, five of whom were captured and brutally tortured by the British, 12 of whom had their homes burnt, two were killed in the actual battles of the war, two sons of signers were killed, and you know, many were just driven off from their lands. And so really, when they pledged their lives, their honor, and their sacred fortune, it was not something that was said lightly. It was something they actually had to walk the walk on, and many suffered dearly in order to make sure that we won the War of Independence and that Americans could have their freedom.
Yeah, and simply by signing their name to that, they essentially signed their name to a most wanted list for the British.
And the British came after them with a vengeance. And so, you know, what we see with this declaration is the, you know, initial document of freedom, and, you know, laying out things which we all celebrate today. My favorite, of course, is the pursuit of happiness. It doesn't guarantee us happiness, but it guarantees our ability to pursue happiness. And happiness is not defined. You know, happiness is defined in the hearts of, you know, each individual citizen of our country. And so that I think, is just a wonderful idea. Thomas Jefferson wrote the majority of the document, although at the time the country thought it was the Congress that wrote it completely. But Jefferson works in the ideas about the rights of man and really some of the great ideas of the Age of Enlightenment, which, you know, guide our country forward today.
Yeah, and I'm kind of glad they didn't define happiness, because if they had tried to do that, defining happiness or pursuit of health and wellness and everything else, I mean, that would have been tyranny. You can't tell people how to be happy. All right, let's take our break right here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Greg Leo coming up. We're going to be talking about some more of the traditions of the Fourth, especially as the country expanded westward. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson. Today is our annual 4th of July show, and to do that, we are talking with Greg Leo. He's sort of the father of Christmas, but for the 4th of July instead. Greg is our in-house historian, and we'd love to have him on to talk about the 4th of July, a great patriot and somebody who knows an awful lot about how the 4th has been celebrated down through the years. And so, Greg, let's shift westward slightly, because back in the day, you know, first, of course, we won the Revolutionary War, and then we had to essentially fight the War of Independence all over again in 1812. And so after that, from my readings, the level of participation in the 4th of July celebrations really ramped up quite a bit after the War of 1812.
Well, there was great patriotism in the country, and as Manifest Destiny was, you know, first conceived and then realized, you know, Americans pushed their way over the Appalachians and, you know, the Alleghenies, and then pushed their way into the Ohio Valley, and eventually, you know, gold was found in California, and the Great Migration happened. For Oregon, it was, you know, very important, because Oregon was an idea, a larger idea that people in the East heard about through Kelly Hall and Kelly J. Hall and others, or I'm sorry, Hall J. Kelly and others, and they heard about the land of milk and honey and the Eden at the end of the Oregon Trail, and that gave fuel to the Great Migration of 1843, which, you know, we've heard a lot about the Oregon Trail, but what is amazing is you can go to places in eastern Oregon today and still see the ruts across the prairie of the Oregon Trail. And so during this Great Migration, people brought their freedom with them. It was an idea that transferred to this new place It was the way that Americans liked to govern themselves, and they established their government here on the West Coast, the very first American-style self-government at Shampui in 1843.
That's right. And as they brought their freedom with them, they also brought their celebrations with them. And I came across a really great article, and it's from the Indiana Magazine of History. It was written in 1912. And at the time, in 1912, they were looking at reviving some traditions because there was then, in 1912, a, quote, present-day movement for a safe and sane 4th of July. The article went on to describe some of the early 4th of July celebrations in Indiana, and I'll discuss those in a second. But it's interesting because, remember, at the time, Indiana was the wild frontier for a while. But before I mention some of the celebrations there, does it surprise you that in 1912 there was a movement for a so-called safe and sane 4th of July?
Well, no doubt the state of fireworks had been upgraded by that time. I always think that the origin of American fireworks really is Fort McHenry in 1812, you know, where the rockets, red glare, the bombs bursting in air, you know, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. And really, when you sit in St. Paul and you listen and you watch the beautiful fireworks display they have there, it is not hard to imagine artillery bursting over Fort McHenry and the, you know, stalwart Patriots defending against the British and their attempt to retake America. And so it is a tradition that we brought. And, of course, with any fireworks or any explosives, there's a certain amount of danger and a safe way to do it. So even today, of course, we always talk about the safe and sane aspects of it. But, you know, think about the reasons why we have fireworks. And I think it's to remind us that our freedoms were born from, you know, the fiery cauldron of war.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'd like to read a little bit from that article. These are some of the traditions that were there. It was really interesting that very soon after Indiana became a state, which was, I think, 1816, they were already holding some informal 4th of July gatherings, but it became very much a tradition starting in about 1822. The programs of these 4th of July occasions varied slightly, but certain features were rigidly established. And as I read this, I remembered a lot of our previous shows where we talked about how some of these things became very ingrained and were really part of the traditions, and you'll see that here. The big thing, of course, was that the Declaration of Independence must be read. There must be an oration of peculiar patriotic stamp which belongs to that day and is unique, and there must be a profusion of toasts reflecting the same spirit. And it's interesting, they talk about one of the orations that went on so long it took 11 newspaper columns to rewrite that.
It was an amazing time of American oration. And, you know, people were used to longer speeches and the sermons that would go on for hours. I don't think our Americans today would tolerate that kind of length. But the idea was to remind people about their freedom and how it was hard fought and how it had to be earned, you know, in the War of Independence. So reading the Declaration really does bring back what this is all about and what our freedoms are based on. So that's an element that's very important today. But I think we can half and then quarter again the length of the speeches of yesterday, keep them to 20 minutes so people don't fidget, go off and find hot dogs and watermelon to entertain themselves, you know.
Yeah, 11 columns in a newspaper. And they were, you know, yeah. Well, anyway, that was quite the oration for sure.
Yeah, Lincoln's, you know, Gettysburg Address and how he could say so much in such a short period, whereas the, you know, principal speaker went on for hours, and we never remember today a word of what was said of that speech. So,
yeah, and the other thing, too, that they mentioned there is that there was a profusion of toasts, and it says that in 1827 the toasts numbered not fewer than 40. And just to give you a sample of some of the toasts that they would give, the day we celebrate it, it will never be forgotten so long as the genius of liberty has a tabernacle in which she can dwell. Some of the other ones were, to the soldiers, patriots, and statesmen of the Revolution, Indianapolis, in its growth almost unparalleled, may its health and prosperity be continued. And then usually at the tail end of this patriotism, there was a gallant toast or two, to the fair. Although after 40 rounds of toast, I'm surprised they can string three words together, and it's probably more akin to the fair.
No doubt it became less clear. But the idea of a toast for each star of the flag, I think, is a tradition that came through.
Wow.
You know, as the country was growing, as the territories became states, then each one of these states would come into the country, and there was almost like a welcoming toast on the 4th of July to the new states that would come in. And so toasting, of course, is a great art form, one we ought to really practice today because it gives meaning to the libation, not just the focus on the libation itself.
That's right, and that's a great point. Although I had mentioned earlier that they were at that time looking to have a safe and sane 4th of July celebration, and this is probably why. This is from that article. The celebrations became larger and more boisterous as the town grew. Processions and parades, Sunday schools got involved. And then this, in 1829, a piece of ordnance known as Captain Blake's Cannon opened the day with a salute of 24 guns. The following 4th, this cannon, which did noisy duty on every permissible occasion, blew off the arm of Andrew Smith while adding flourish to a song on the Liberty Tree. So there you go. That probably explains why they were looking for a safe and sane holiday, 4th of July. All right, we're up against the clock. Everyone stay with us. Coming up, we'll be talking about some celebrations on the Oregon Trail.
Stay informed. News, information, and all our past shows are available on iSpyRadio.com.
And welcome back. This is our annual 4th of July celebration here on the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking with business and political communications consultant and strategist Greg Leo. He is an avid amateur historian, and he is our regular go-to guy for this sort of thing. And so, Greg, we're talking about some of the early traditions on the 4th of July, especially as the country grew, really from the earliest days. It involved reading the Declaration of Independence, firing of some arms or firing off of some arms, depending on how you look at it. And then also drinking figured very prominently in a lot of these celebrations. But I should have mentioned, too, in that Indiana article, I didn't know that the traditions of barbecues was dated back so far into American history. This was in the 1820s, and they were having barbecues then.
Oh, barbecuing has been throughout American history. And, of course, on the trail over across the Oregon Trail, you know, they would definitely barbecue. They would have stock that they could, barbecue and also get game, local game as they came. And more or less, they'd take the day off on the trail, and they would have a feast. Somebody would play the fiddle. They would sing the patriotic songs, and they would read the Declaration. And really, that's, in a sense, how they brought the American traditions to this new country here on the West Coast, on the Pacific Coast.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before I leave that Indiana article, one of the big takeaways for me from that article was that the 4th of July in those early years, I mean, that was really the big holiday in a number of ways, because there were no federal holidays at the time. You didn't Christmas, for a lot of people, went by almost without notice. That article talks about how there was only a single ad in the newspaper that otherwise you wouldn't even have known that it was Christmas time. And there was no Thanksgiving. Easter, of course, was, you know, a strictly religious holiday, but, you know, again, not everybody celebrated that. So the 4th of July, that was it. So, of course, they really pulled out all the stops when it came to celebrating the 4th.
Coming as close after, you know, the summer solstice, it's, you know, when summer has really kicked in, it's after the planting season, but before the harvest. You know, in an agrarian society, it is a time when things are planted and growing, but not yet ready for harvest. And so it is a time when, you know, a farmer, an early farmer who is a subsistence type farmer, could, you know, take time off and celebrate. And so I think the combination of the time of the year and kind of what people were doing at that particular time gave everybody the opportunity to join together in community. So the elements of what we celebrate today really go back through our history. You know, the patriotic celebration, the barbecue, you know, the toasts and the wine, and the opportunity really to get together with friends and family in a barbecue or picnic setting to really enjoy each other.
Yeah, and it is interesting to see how ingrained these traditions have been. The one thing that a lot of celebrations don't do anymore is they don't have patriotic speakers up there. A lot of them will have bands and stuff, and I guess that's a pretty decent substitute. But it would be nice to have people actually go up and talk about that. You know, and I guess, you know, maybe that's just me, but and then also the reading of the Declaration. I really wish that if there was any tradition that we could bring back, it would be that one, because that is, you know, that really is so important how that unites us.
It really is, and if you pull it down, what I did was I pulled it down. I found it broke easily into 65 pieces, and so there's 27 which are the indictments. And you know, the kids in the audience love to read some of the indictments, you know, about how they've stopped our vessels at high seas and, you know, et cetera, the quartering of troops and all the rest. And then the parts about taxation, I always find somebody in the crowd that really wants to say it with gusto and give him the, and he levied unfair taxes against the citizens, you know, and people love that. So reading the Declaration aloud gives it new meaning.
It does.
And if you can have people of all ages read a piece of it, it really makes it a beautiful celebration.
Yeah, it really is kind of like reading Bible verses for the Patriots in a way. So let's talk a little bit about the continued expansion west. The 4th of July on the Oregon Trail, there was actually a rock called Independence Rock. It was near present-day Lander, Wyoming. It's about dead center north to south in Wyoming and about two-thirds of the way westward across Wyoming. And it's this giant granite dome that rises about 200 feet out of the dry flatland. We'll put a picture of that up on iSpyRadio.com. And it looks almost like a humpback whale suddenly coming up out of the prairie like that. Within a few years, there were celebrations every year as hundreds of thousands of Americans on the Oregon Trail went by it between 1840 and 1860. There was actually two very good reasons for celebrating the 4th of July there. One was that it was, you know, an occasion to celebrate Independence Day was going on back in the States. But secondly, if wagon trains from jumping off towns along the Missouri River, which was the western border of the United States at that time when the trail opened, as long as you reached the rock by the 4th of July, you were in really good position to make it over the mountains.
And it really was the beginning of the unknown. I mean, there have been stories about, you know, the area up to the Missouri River. But once you got to Independence Rock and you were pushing off into the unknown, it really was something that most people did not really know about. And, of course, the trails, to some degree, were uncertain. I mean, there are stories of lost wagon trains that tried to take a shortcut and got themselves stuck in horrible situations. But, you know, the stories are also that there is a fork in the road just the other side of in Wyoming, where you would go south to California and stay north to Oregon. And the apocryphal story, I think, is that the sign said to Oregon, those who read would take that path. Those that could not read went on down to California.
Yeah.
At least that's what I hear Oregonians say.
I have heard that story as well. You know, before we get to, we're coming up on a break here, but before we get to the Pioneer Journals that I wanted to read from, it's interesting that they say they were celebrating the 4th of July because that's what they were doing back in the States. And I think that now that we're living in what became the state that they were traveling to, it's easy to forget that they were leaving the U.S. when they were there. There was no guarantee that the Oregon Territory would become a state. Maybe it would join the British. Maybe it would be part of the U.S. And wouldn't that be a step backwards if they end up joining the British?
Well, and of course, it was disputed between, Spain and Britain and the United States. And it was really a matter of population that settled the Oregon question. The fact that we did have the migrants of the 1843 migration and that there were enough to meet at Shampooey and then decide to be American-style self-government rather than being subjects of the crown. That was the important decision made in, you know, May 3rd, 1843 at Shampooey. And then, so after that, it was a question of actually populating the valley and setting up the economic system that would support the settlers. And once they got here, there were a lot of things that they wanted from the East, and what they carried with them were the laws of other states and the national constitution and, of course, the Declaration, which helped guide the formation of self-government here on the Pacific Coast.
Well, I just think it's interesting that we forget sometimes what risk they were taking. It wasn't just the physical risk of moving across the country, but also a real political risk. Here you win your independence from the British crown, a few decades later, you may be moving back into the British crown. So, all right, let's take a break right there. Everyone stay with us. Well, coming up, we'll have some Pioneer Journals from those celebrations at Independence Rock. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. Today is our annual 4th of July show, and we are talking with Greg Leo. He's a business and political communications consultant and strategist, and he is an avid amateur historian. And nobody loves the 4th quite like Greg Leo does. And so we'll talk about a celebration that he has, that he hosts every year at Shampooey Park, and stay with us for that. But Greg, in the last segment, I was talking about some celebrations that happened there at Independence Rock along the Oregon Trail. And I'd just like to read some excerpts here from a Pioneer Journal. It was by Enoch Conyers. He left Quincy, Illinois on April 20th, 1852, made it to Independence Rock right on schedule. And the following is from his journal. Before I get there, though, it's interesting to note that they didn't have a flag. So the day before the 4th of July, the ladies actually had to manufacture their own Old Glory to wave over their celebrations. One lady brought forth a sheet, another one brought forth a skirt for the red stripes, and another one brought in a blue jacket. And so they kind of had to make their own flag. That's, again, something we just don't really think about. But here's his journal from the 4th. The day was ushered in with the booming of small arms, which was the best that we could do under the circumstances so far away from civilization. Just before the sun made its appearance above the eastern horizon, we raised our 40-foot flagstaff with yesterday's Old Glory nailed fast to the top. Our company circled around the old flag and sang the Star-Spangled Banner. Then three rousing cheers and a tiger were given to Old Glory. The honor of delivering the oration fell to the lot of Virgil Ralston, a son of Dr. J.N. Ralston of Quincy, Illinois. Unfortunately, he with several other young men of our company went this morning to the Devil's Gate, where they obtained a little too much fire water, and by the time they reached the camp were considerably under the influence. But this was the glorious old 4th, therefore the oration we must have. The Declaration of Independence was read by R.L. Doyle of Keokuk, Iowa, after which several of the boys gathered around Virgil, our esteemed orator, lifting him bodily upon the end of one of our long tables, where they steadied him until he became sufficiently braced up, and then let go of him. He spoke for over half an hour and delivered, offhand, an excellent oration. The menu for the day included roast antelope, roast sage hen, roast rabbit, antelope stew, sage stew, sage hen stew, jackrabbit stew, antelope pot pie, fried sage hen, fried jackrabbit, Irish potatoes brought from Illinois, Boston baked beans, rice, pickles, white bread, graham bread, warm rolls fresh from the oven, and for dessert, pound cake, fruit cake, jelly cake, sweet water mountain cake, peach pie, apple pie, strawberry pie, custard pie, and a dozen or more varieties of cakes that he didn't get into. All of that was washed down with coffee, coffee, tea, chocolate, and good cold mountain water fresh from the brook, and apparently a lot of fire water as well. So, Greg, there you go. That was the 4th of July celebration out on the Oregon Trail. I got to tell you, if it wasn't for that journal, I never would have believed they would have had that much food for their celebration.
They were wonderfully good at, bringing food and, of course, shooting game and doing the things they needed to do along the way. But imagine the cooks. I mean, the cooks had to be working for days to be able to put up such a feast. And all of the elements are there to a great 4th of July. Celebration of the flag, having a great barbecue, having friends, a little bit of libation and a wonderful speech. I mean, it's all right there.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And he described the day as a 4th of July in the plains, never to be forgotten. And, of course, the very next day, the wagon trains rolled out on their way to the Oregon, either the Oregon Territory or California or even down into Salt Lake City. So you were talking during the break there, actually.
Kids were raised and their hopes, for the future. And that's partly what we do on the 4th is we reflect about our lives and the direction of it and how our lives can be better as we pursue happiness, as the founding fathers have told us we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you were saying during the break there that there was a lot of things that happened on the 4th because of the 4th. So why don't you go into that?
Well, one of the most significant is, of course, the Battle of Gettysburg, which really was the turning point of the Civil War. But we think about, why Lee was heading up north. He was trying to capture the capital, Pennsylvania, and Harrisburg. And, the idea that you would have the seminal battle of the Great War, which changed the United States from, many to one on the 4th of July is not insignificant. Of course, at the same time, Grant was taking Vicksburg on the Mississippi, and the Union thereby divided the Confederacy. Moving forward to 1876, we see that Custer's plan for, taking on the Indians at the Little Bighorn was all predicated on the idea that he would be in the front page of the paper on the 100th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration. And that's why he drove his men so hard into the ambush that was his undoing. And so throughout American history, its turning points tend to happen on the 4th of July, partly because it's early in the summer and that's when, you know, a lot of change is happening, but, you know, partly because people are motivated to make their day part of that that great independence story.
Yeah, absolutely. We're kind of coming up on a break, so let's do that a little earlier. Just before we go, though, I should add that Enid Conyers arrived in Oregon City 2 months after that 4th of July and went on to become one of Clatskanie's first settlers and leading citizens. Everyone stay with us. We will have more with Greg Leo talking about our annual 4th of July show coming up. We'll be talking about 4th of July in modern times.
Hi, I'm Matt Almendinger, and I want to tell you a little bit about Landmark Pacific. Over the last 25 years, they've completed over 600 commercial steel building projects. They specialize in industrial, commercial, and agribusiness, but did you know they also handle residential building and repair? Give Dave Almendinger at Landmark Pacific a call now for new buildings, remodels, or repairs at 503-743-3256. That's 503-743-3256. Find them on Facebook or landmarkpacific.com.
CCB 65107.
This is the iSpy Radio Show.
And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. It is our annual 4th of July show today. We are taking a break from politics and keeping an eye on big government to really focus on celebrating our freedoms. To do that, we are talking with business and political communications consultant and strategist Greg Leo. He is our usual guest for this sort of thing. And Greg, I'd like to kind of shift gears a little bit and start talking about the 4th of July celebrations in modern times. And, you know, it's kind of actually interesting. I had said earlier that the 4th of July was really the celebration because there weren't any federal holidays. It wasn't even or even statewide holidays because you didn't have Christmas was really a big thing until much later. Same thing with Thanksgiving. It wasn't even really until after Lincoln instituted that it really took off. But 4th of July was it. But it's interesting. The Congress didn't even make it an official holiday until 1870.
Well, and it was really a civic holiday as opposed to the religious holidays
yes.
that would be throughout the year. But, you know, the date was fixed because of the independence, you know, Declaration of Independence, and that gave cause for celebration. Coming as it did, you know, right after the solstice, it was a time when people had time to barbecue and to be outdoors and the like. There are a number of really great 4th of July events around Oregon. I know there are ones in Hillsboro and Grants Pass and really throughout the state. So checking with your local community paper, you can see where people gathered. And
so, Greg, speaking of places where people can gather and some of the different celebrations that are out there, I know later on we'll be talking about the Shampooey Park celebration that you guys got. But what are, aside from your Shampooey Park celebration that you guys do every year, what are some of your favorite 4th of July traditions, perhaps from your childhood?
Well, I think the parades are great. And anytime that you can be in a parade, it's a wonderful experience. You know, there are a number of 4th of July parades around Oregon. I think people can, you know, find those in their local papers. But just to go to the parades and to see the patriotism, I think is a great thing that any Oregonian should do.
It is, and that was certainly figured very prominently in my childhood. And it's kind of sad, though, that it's harder and harder sometimes to find 4th of July parades. I know that there's one here in Staten, which is near us. Staten, Oregon, we're about 12 miles east of Salem. They actually have a fantastic 4th of July parade. But it is sad that they seem to be rarer and rarer, which kind of brings me to my next point, is that at looking at modern-day 4th of July celebrations, you know, sometimes it seems that there are some growing restrictions on celebrations. It's too costly. You need insurance in case anyone blows their arm off with a cannon. Or over on the coast, they actually tried to stop fireworks because they were worried it would scare the birds on the coast. But, you know, I think as people look at that, what's really at the heart of that is the concern that maybe we'll lose our traditions and that that our children will know and experience the same love of country that we have. But there's this fear that we're losing that because as we become further removed from the signing of the Declaration or that the next generation just won't appreciate the hard-won freedoms that we now enjoy. What are your thoughts on that?
People need to keep the traditions alive, I think, and each family should have the traditions in their own way. But, you know, we urge people to really read about history and to tell, you know, the kids and the family why we're celebrating the 4th of July. And that's why reading the Declaration is so important. But these are traditions that people have to maintain. And every family will have their own traditions. But I believe it starts at the family level and then grows to the community. And, you know, having community events during the 4th is a great opportunity to see your neighbors, have an opportunity to talk to them, and just celebrate together. So 4th of July events generally, you know, can build community, and people need to go out of their way to make it happen. Unfortunately, the holiday has been commercialized, as so many of our holidays have been. It's not about automobile sales or mattress sales, and it's best just to turn the TV off on the 4th and go out and see your friends and neighbors, have a great barbecue, hear a couple good speeches, maybe fire off a few fireworks safely, and read the Declaration. I think that's how people keep the tradition alive.
Yeah, firing of cannons is probably not that great of an idea.
People love firing cannons, and pyromania has always been part of this. Bonfires, burning the king in effigy. I mean, hearing the rockets roar and thinking of the of how our freedoms came out of the cauldron of war. I mean, this is part of the tradition. So yeah. I would certainly not ban fireworks on the 4th of July. It would be un-American.
Yeah, so speaking of so some of the traditions and whatnot, I know that in talking with you as we were getting the show set up, you had mentioned that there's some really cool genealogical research that people can do through the Daughters of the American Revolution and through the Sons of the American Revolution. Talk to our audience a little bit about some of the resources that are out there, because I'm a big fan of genealogy. I actually managed to find that I have several ancestors that made it through the Revolutionary War and participated in it.
Well, all of us are proud of our ancestors, and as we do the historical research, which is really not that difficult, we find that we are connected to people who fought in the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, came across on the Western Migration. So a great place to get started is to be in touch with the Daughters of the American Revolution. The DAR has great genealogical resources. There are a number of chapters across Oregon, and the Daughters are happy to work with people to complete their application, which has to show a genealogical connection with a person who fought in the Revolution.
Yeah.
And so I also would like to just do a shout out to the Mormon Church, has done a wonderful genealogy center in Salt Lake, and I'm sure that the ladies of the DAR would be happy to point you in that direction also to document your family history and your family tree.
It really is cool to go back and see your ancestors that have participated in that. I actually found the more recent one that I found actually went through Valley Forge with Washington, so that was really cool to find that. All right, we do need to take a break. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more on the annual 4th of July show with Greg Leo. Stay with us. And welcome back to our annual 4th of July show here on the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, and we are talking with Greg Leo. He is a political consultant and business consultant and an absolutely huge fan of the 4th of July. We have him on every year to talk about some of our traditions and celebrations. And Greg, one of your big annual events is the celebration there at Newell House, which is at Shampooey Park. For people in other parts of the state that may not have heard of Shampooey Park, why don't you talk to us a little bit about what that is and why that's historically important?
Well, it's an Oregon State Park that's in northern Marion County on the Willamette River, and it's co-located with historic Newell House, or what they call now a Newell Pioneer Village. And Newell Pioneer Village is run by the Daughters of the American Revolution. About 7 years ago, we wanted to create an event that took all the old traditions of the patriotic 4th of July. And so we created the old-fashioned patriotic 4th of July celebration and modeled it on how people would have celebrated the 4th of July in past years. And so each year we pick a theme. This year we picked the Western Migration. We have a wonderful fiddle player named Truman Price, who he looks like old man time with a long flowing beard, and he plays the fiddle from the hip. But he has wonderful songs about the Oregon Trail and the Western Migration. He will be playing. We have a great bluegrass band, Corral Creek, who will be playing along with us. and we sing various patriotic songs. In fact, we are introducing a new song about Oregon called the 33rd Star this year. So this is going to be a great event. I wanted to throw out a contest to your listeners here from all over Oregon. We will be singing Yankee Doodle, and we will be inviting people to bring their own verses of Yankee Doodle. Mm. So as you know, Yankee Doodle was what the Revolutionary War time people sang. Really, it was a response to the mocking tone of the British. But we ask you to write your own version. So it's something like this. Yankee Doodle came to Old Shampoo to celebrate our freedom. Read the words and sing the songs that made us a great nation. So you can see that if you write a verse like that, make it the Yankee Doodle, come. We won't make you sing it, but somebody will. And then the winner will get a patriotic prize at our historic Newell House 4th of July.
Any hints on what that that historic prize would be, the patriotic prize, I mean?
Well, we are actually, it's kind of a little bit of a secret, but I'll share it with your listeners, that we are giving away musical instruments this year. We will have jaw harps, we will have nose whistles, harmonicas, and other you know, things, prizes that people will win on our Oregon History Bee, which is something we do every year. We ask questions, Oregon history questions, and then people answer them and they win prizes. So we'll have musical instruments, and of course we always give away a lot of American flags. Everybody leaves with something from the patriotic 4th of July event at Newell House.
So no muskets or cannons?
Well, we did have a musket last year. You know, we probably leave the fireworks to others who are doing a great job all across the Portland area and, of course, across Oregon. A number of great fireworks displays. But since this is in the middle of the afternoon, we think we'll probably leave that to others.
Yeah, and I should mention that the website for that is newellpioneervillage.com. And just head to their events page. And just to give you a brief overview of that, it's going to have food, music, and festivities. Bring your own lawn chairs, relax on the front lawn of the Newell House while listening to history interpreters and relive a day gone by. There'll be history quiz for kids and adults, so be prepared to share your knowledge. And of course, you've got some great food there. You've got barbecued hot dogs or sausage and some strawberry shortcake, and you have a pie tasting contest.
We do. The pie tasting contest is a fierce competition for the bragging rights of the best pie from French Prairie, and then we auction off the pie afterwards. The proceeds go to support our education programs at Newell Pioneer Village. And I would also say the first 64 people who ask for a line of the Declaration will be able to read responsibly, you know, in order, the Declaration of Independence.
And that really is fun to hear that read like that with everybody joining in like that. And I don't think we mentioned that the event is free to the public.
It is free to the public, no charge. It's located at 8089 Shampooig Road Northeast in St. Paul. If you're going to the St. Paul Rodeo, we've scheduled that so you can be at Historic Newell House and then enjoy the 80th anniversary of the St. Paul Rodeo, which would start at 7:30 that evening.
Yeah, St. Paul Rodeo is absolutely fantastic. I've been there. It's actually one of the bigger ones in the nation.
It's the 12th biggest PCRA rodeo in the nation, and it has 10,000 people a night that come to St. Paul, a town of 430 people. It is a magnificent event and very, very patriotic.
Yeah, and I should mention, too, that the time for this is it begins at 4, goes until 6, like you say, just before the rodeo. But if people want to get there early and tour some of the museums, they actually close at 3. So, and again, we'll put all that up on iSpyRadio.com. Greg, we are up against the clock here. I want to thank you so much for your time today. I look forward to this every year.
Celebrate your freedom. Enjoy Independence Day and pursue happiness.
That's right. Happy 4th of July, Greg.
Thank you.
It is time for us to get going here on the iSpy Radio Show. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. These shows are an awful lot of fun to put together, and I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. We'll be sure to link up all of those articles that we mentioned during today's show, that Pioneer Journal, along with the historical article on Indiana. A lot of fun to read. We just very much touched on the surface of those. So take a look there at iSpyRadio.com. Just look for today's show. That is 526. And a special thanks to Greg Leo, our amateur in-house historian. I just got to say that I just appreciate his love of country more than ever, especially in light of this week. You know, Lady Liberty is still pretty beautiful, even when she takes a few black eyes. Thank you again for joining us today. Have a great and safe 4th of July. Although, maybe stay away from those cannons. Happy birthday, America. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.